In this podcast series, we discuss the first-line treatment strategies for the management of locally advanced metastatic urothelial carcinoma in Canada. This part of the series is based on a live webinar presented on September 12, 2023 by Dr. Normand Blais from the CHUM Cancer Center in Montreal, Dr. Terence Friedlander from the Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital, and Dr. Shrikala Shridhar from the Princess Margaret Cancer Center in Toronto. The video of the webinar is divided into four episodes, which are available on our website, and the link can be found in the episode description. In this second episode taken from the webinar, Dr. Terence Friedlander presents clinical data in the first-line setting and provides a U.S. perspective on how he manages the treatment of locally advanced metastatic urothelial carcinoma. Hope you enjoy it.
I'm going to focus in on a trial that I think is really important that I had the pleasure of being part of. And that's a study looking at enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab given together. So many of you may know enfortumab vedotin is an antibody drug conjugate that targets Nectin-4, which is overexpressed in urothelial cancer. There's a linker protein that dissolves within the cell in the cytoplasm, and then it's conjugated to a microtubule disrupting agent called MMAE. This is a pretty toxic chemotherapy. We know that MMAE directly paralyzes the microtubules, and there's some data from other studies of MMAE. In fact, it's used in other antibody drug conjugates like brentuximab vedotin and Hodgkin's lymphoma, that when the cells die, there may also be an immune component to this. So the cells die and they may release proteins that essentially attract immune cells to the tumor microenvironment. And that can be very helpful in trying to generate an immune response. And that's really forms the sort of basis for combining EV with pembrolizumab. In this schema here, you have EV on top, which is binding to Nectin-4, getting into the cell and causing this direct cytotoxicity, and then resulting in the release of these immune mediators. If we give that together, at least the hypothesis was that if we give it together with pembrolizumab, maybe we can get synergy here. So we actually get a better effect by giving both drugs at the same time than we would if we just gave them sequentially or separated. And that's what the EV-103 trial was aiming to test and what the larger phase 3 trial will look at in probably a little more detail. So this is the study design for EV-103. So these were patients with locally advanced or metastatic urothelial cancer. They were all ineligible for cisplatin according to the commonly accepted criteria. They received enfortumab vedotin standard dosing, which had been approved in the later line settings, along with pembrolizumab given every 3 weeks. And there were two groups that were reported thus far in the study. There was cohort A, which had about 45 patients total, and then cohort K, which was a non-comparative randomization to EV pembro or EV alone. And these weren't very large numbers, 76 patients or about in each group. And that was just to get a sense of what EV does by itself in the front line and compare and at least see what EV and pembro does in the front line. And so what did the study show? Well, first of all, the cohort A showed a fair amount of activity. 73% of patients had objective responses by RECIST, and that most of these responses happened quickly, usually at the very first tumor assessment at about 9 weeks. And many of them were durable, some of these going out to 6 months or longer. And at later data, you'll see that some of these are really durable. So that was exciting. This is the duration of response. So once patients started to respond, many of them continued to respond. So the median duration of response was almost 2 years. Once patients got out to about the two-year mark, nobody has progressed since in this somewhat small cohort, but certainly a sign of clinical activity. Now, when we look at progression-free survival, the median PFS was 12.7 months, but there's a really nice tail on the curve at about 40% of patients who are doing really well. And then the overall survival actually exceeds 2 years. Now, if you go back to the early 2000s, there was a study of carboplatin and gemcitabine given in the pre-IO era. The median survival was only 9 months. So now we're seeing two-year median overall survival in a cisplatin-ineligible group. And that's pretty exciting. Obviously, we need to see this in a larger study, but certainly worth discussing. So switching gears to talk about cohort K, this was the randomized cohort. And I'm really just going to focus on the cohort that contained EV and pembro together. So the waterfall plot for EV plus pembro in cohort K very much looks like the waterfall plot we saw with the original cohort A, in that it was about 64% of patients here had RECIST responses. What I think is also important here is that the responses didn't depend on PD-L1 status, where patients high, low, or any valuable still had good responses. And we saw a number of patients with complete responses. So essentially all the disease vanished when we gave this regimen. So again, pretty exciting and nice to see consistent data. EV plus Pembro had about 64.5% response rate. EV alone, about 45% response rate. And this is about 10% of patients were having CR. So that was pretty, again, pretty exciting. And one other point that I think is important is that over half of patients who had liver metastases had RECIST responses. Now, liver metastases and bladder cancer are a poor prognostic sign. Patients with them tend to do very poorly and be resistant to most therapies. So we're actually seeing some good responses in these patients. And so again, that's encouraging when, you know, to see this data. When we look at the PFS and OS, this is the most recent data that we presented at ASCO and just published in the JCO. And we actually haven't met the median. It looks like we have, but we actually are just above the median, both for PFS and for OS. This was an 18-month cutoff. So we'll see as the study matures a little bit more what the actual PFS and OS, the medians are. But enough to say that we're seeing pretty consistent activity from the later lines of therapy in the EV-301 trial and from cohort A and now in cohort K. In terms of side effects, the side effects of EV and Pembro are both pretty well known. And I would say the most concerning to me are neuropathy, which occurs in about 50% of patients. Regardless of whether or not you give Pembro, that's an MMAE effect, very similar to taxanes. And then skin issues like rash, some of which can be severe. And actually, when you combine EV and Pembro, this is probably the most important data, is that skin reactions are more common because this is an on-target side effect of both of these drugs, with about 17% of patients having grade 3 side effects, including Stevens-Johnson syndrome and other really serious problems. So while I'm excited about this regimen, we do have to be careful about side effects and really educate patients. And I'll talk about that in a second. All of this was really the sort of groundwork for the EV-302 trial, which is ongoing. We have no data from this study yet, but this randomizes patients who are cisplatin eligible or ineligible to get EV Pembro or cisgem or carbogem as a comparator arm. There was no avelumab included in this study because the study launched before the avelumab data was out. Very late in the game allowed some patients to get avelumab. So we'll see hopefully very soon the results of this study, and we'll be able to look at EV versus gem cis and hopefully EV versus gem carbo and try and understand how it stacks up.
So thinking about the frontline space, you know, there's been some recent updates just in September of 2022. The first was a press release from the EV-302 clinical trial that announced that it was positive. And recall, this is a study of pembrolizumab plus enfortumab vedotin compared to either cisplatin or carboplatin plus gemcitabine. So the study was announced as being positive for both overall survival and PFS. We have yet to see the data here. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what the data looks like. One caveat with this study is that maintenance of avelumab was not mandated for all the patients in the control arm. But we really want to see how many patients actually got maintenance of avelumab to understand the sort of relative benefits of EV plus Pembro compared to cisplatin or platinum-based chemotherapy and avelumab. So we're eagerly looking forward to this study. There was a second press release concerning the CheckMate 901 study. So some of you may know CheckMate 901 builds off an earlier study called CheckMate 032, which evaluated the combination of nivolumab and ipilimumab in urothelial cancer. The CheckMate 032 study showed a 38% overall response rate, including 6.5% CR rate with induction nevo-ipi followed by nivolumab maintenance. So the CheckMate 901 trial was a sort of a multi-arm study with four different cohorts that was asking two important questions. The first was, what is the value of nivolumab and ipilimumab as a standard frontline therapy compared to platinum-based chemotherapy? And then secondly, what is the value of platinum-based chemotherapy plus nivolumab compared to just standard platinum-based chemotherapy? And they asked that specifically in patients who are cisplatin eligible. So the study design basically has four arms. As I've mentioned, the first two cohorts were nevo-ipi for four doses, and then nivolumab maintenance. That was being done, and that was being compared to standard platinum-based chemotherapy in cisplatin-ineligible patients. So now a number of months ago, that was announced as a negative study. So cohorts A and B of this trial were considered negative. But just in September of 2022, the cohorts C and D were announced as positive. And again, that's cisplatin, gemcitabine, and nivolumab, followed by maintenance nivolumab, compared to cisplatin and gemcitabine. And when I say positive, I mean positive for overall survival. This data has not yet been presented, although we expect that it should be presented soon, possibly at the ESMO meeting this year. So the press release was very clear about this, meeting its dual primary endpoints of overall survival and PFS. And I think this is going to very likely change how we treat frontline patients. And we'll talk about that perhaps a little more in the discussion.
Going back to EV and pembrolizumab, what are the pros and cons of using this regimen?
I think the benefit, there's a high response rate. You know, we've never seen a combination with response rates close to 70% in frontline bladder cancer. The data, as just showed you, I think is pretty strong. Actually, no biomarkers needed. You know, even though it targets Nectin-4, it seems that Nectin-4 is overexpressed in most patients. And there's probably more work we could do there to better understand biomarkers, including Nectin-4. One of the things I like about this regimen is that we're not waiting to give the immune therapy. You're giving the immune therapy on day one. And the lesson I took home from the JAVELIN 100 study is that giving the avelumab earlier is better than waiting to give an immune therapy, waiting for progression, because patients get sick and some of them never make it back to actually get the therapy. So you're really getting it in. I think side effects are real, but they're tolerable. And it's now listed as a preferred option in NCCN and our guidelines here in the States. I think the downside is the dosing is quite frequent. You know, they're in your clinic every 2 out of every 3 weeks. We don't have head-to-head data. We don't yet have phase 3 data in the front line for this combination. And then the side effects, as I mentioned, are real. And I think we need to think about that, because that could be a major problem. So what to do about side effects? Well, I think preparing patients is like probably the most important thing. Telling them they're very likely to get neuropathy, they're very likely to get a skin rash, really gets them sort of ready to think about it. You know, there are there's ocular toxicity to this, mostly front of the eye, keratitis kind of syndrome, tearing and things like that. So I usually have an ophthalmologist I know, and I'll send the patient there if they need it. I often tell patients we'll have to dose reduce therapy at some point because of the neuropathy. It's just like giving a taxane, where you can't essentially give full dose taxanes forever. People eventually have to dose reduce. And I think that gets patients ready. There's some early data that says that patients who are obese may have worse outcomes in terms of hyperglycemia, which is another toxicity of EV. So I'm very careful to monitor A1C. I don't give the drug if the blood glucose is above 250, and I may start at 1 mg/kg for obese patients and then ramp up or down depending on how they're doing. Once they get started on therapy, I monitor for neuropathy all the time. I do a lot of, unfortunately, telehealth and video visits. And so I often ask patients to unbutton or button their shirt for me, you know, on video
while they're doing this. The other important things are look at their gait, because there is a risk for motor neuropathy, and then a full skin exam, because there is skin toxicity and that can help identify that early. Usually the patients will tell you. Pneumonitis has been reported in one study, so I think monitoring for that's important. And then just frequent check-ins like you would for any patient getting chemotherapy. Lastly, is if patients have side effects, I have a low threshold for starting topical steroids or oral steroids for rash. Dose reductions and delays really do help. So I sometimes skip a week or even skip 2 weeks and then start them at one dose lower. You can go down by 20% with each dose with the EV. Sometimes it's hard to know which drug is causing the side effects. Is it EV or Pembro? The side effect profile for EV is pretty well described, whereas Pembro can be more sort of protean. So I really try and dose reduce the EV first, and I'll hold Pembro if I think it's a true autoimmune side effect. I have my friend and colleague who's a dermatologist on my cell phone, and so I text him immediately when I see these rashes, because I'm often sending patients to them. I think ophthalmology and neurology are helpful for eye and for neuropathy if you're having trouble managing that. For diabetes, internal medicine is incredibly important. And I just sort of get the patients ready to use, you know, use prednisone or steroids if they need it. So putting that together, I think it's a very active regimen. Hopefully this helps you understand kind of where this study fits in. And we really look forward to seeing the phase 3 data, which will give us much more to chew on here.